Minnesota House Committee on Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform for a 92nd state legislative session will come to order. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani.
Present.
Vice Chair Frazier.
Present.
Representative Johnson.
Present.
Representative Edelson.
Present.
Representative Feist.
Present.
Representative Grossel.
Present.
Representative Hollins.
Present.
Representative Hewitt.
Present.
Representative Cleavorn.
Present.
Representative Long.
Present.
Representative Lucero.
Present.
Representative Mueller.
Mueller, present.
Representative Novotny.
Novotny, present.
Representative O'Neill.
Present.
Representative Pinto.
Present.
Representative Poston.
Present.
Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh, present.
Representative Vang.
Present.
Representative Shung.
Present.
And that concludes roll call.
Fantastic. And we have a quorum. Everyone, this hearing is conducted under Minnesota House Rule 10.01, allowing for hearings to be held via use of distance voting, remote electronic voting, or voting by other means to protect the health and safety of the public, staff, and members. The hearing is live streamed on the Minnesota House website, and that can be accessed by going to our committee page. Also on that page, you will find the email address for our committee administrator, Mr. Jamel Lundy. For those wishing to offer public testimony, you can email Mr. Lundy 24 hours prior to a hearing. And again, that address is available on our website. Members, we've got three bills to, actually, the first thing I need to do is make sure that I've got the minutes approved. And I usually just sort of pick someone, but let me see if anyone is going to be brave enough to volunteer to make a motion here.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes, Chair.
Fantastic. Vice Chair Frazier moves to adopt the minutes of February 22nd. Discussion? All right. Not seeing any discussion. Representative Johnson, I think per usual, we're okay with a voice vote here.
That is fine.
Very well. Thank you, sir. All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 All same sign. Motion prevails, and the minutes of February 22nd are hereby adopted. Members, we have three bills today. We're going to have a good conversation on them. It is my intention to lay these over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Today's theme is Resourcing Law Enforcement Day. We've got a bill on epinephrine pens. We've got a hiring a bonus bill for law enforcement. Then we have a use of force training reimbursement program bill offered by Representative Novotny. We'll start with House File 2668, Representative Morrison. Vice Chair Frazier, if you would be so kind to move, make a motion to refer this to the Committee on Ways and Means, we can then hear the bill.
So moved, Chair.
Very well. Motion is before us, and which means your bill is before us, Representative Morrison. Welcome to the committee. It's good to have you here. Tell us about your bill, and I believe you also have some testifiers that want to speak on it as well. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to present House File 2668, which is a bill to create a grant program for local law enforcement agencies to be reimbursed for the cost of obtaining epinephrine auto injectors, commonly known as EpiPens, and replacing those that have expired. Many of the calls that law enforcement officers respond to are medical calls, and having life-saving epinephrine auto injectors on hand is critical. These are used to treat allergic reactions that cause anaphylactic reactions. My dog agrees strongly with this bill. Sorry about that.
It sounds like you've got a vote there, Representative.
So these are used to treat allergic reactions that cause anaphylactic reactions, which are life-threatening if not treated quickly. If you personally have an anaphylactic allergy, or you know someone who does, or have witnessed one, you know what a terrifying and life-threatening emergency it is. As a physician, I've seen and cared for patients with anaphylactic allergies, and I know firsthand how important speed is in treating them. Knowing that law enforcement is often the first on a scene makes it critically important that they have access to EpiPens. This bill addresses really the intersection of public safety and health with an overlay of the high cost of prescription drugs. EpiPens are notorious for their high cost, and they are not optional medications. People die without access to them. It's critical that law enforcement, again, often the first on the scene of a medical emergency, have access to this life-saving medication without it draining a department's budget. This idea was brought to me by a chief in my district, Chief Corey Farniak, who serves as the chief of police for the Orono Police Department, which serves the communities of Orono, Minnetonka Beach, Mound, and Spring Park, serving more than 20,000 residents. So I'd like to turn it over to him to further explain the need.
Very well. Thank you, Representative Morrison. Chief, please come forward, state your name for the record, and give us your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members, Corey Farniak. Thank you for the opportunity. Since 2019, we've implemented and had the EpiPens in our vehicles and squads. Over the course of each year, we've used them 2 to 3 times. Last year in 2021, we actually had 2 saves and we injected or used the EpiPens 4 times on medical situations. So the need is there for that. However, the cost is what's it's very costly, anywhere ranging from $50 to $400 per EpiPen, depending on whether we get the generic name brand or the availability. So it's difficult to get these at a reasonable cost, but then we also have the expiration. Currently, we have 15 squads that all of them are equipped with EpiPens. So when they're up for renewal or when they're being used, it comes to a cost of anywhere $50 to $400 to replace these and use these. So it can impact and affect our tight budgets, and we're looking for some assistance. This is similar to the programs that we use for Narcan to address the overdoses. And there we've seen grants and different programs. So just looking for a solution to help with some of the costs related to these valuable tools that we carry and use every day.
Very well. Thank you, Chief, for your testimony. And hopefully you can stick around in case there's some questions from committee members as well. Thank you. And Representative Morrison, I actually don't know the answer to this. I should. Is there a fiscal note? Obviously, we're going to lay this over. We'll be talking more about finances later. But is there a fiscal note presently on your bill?
Mr. Chair, there is a fiscal note.
Okay. And so perhaps maybe either you or Mr. Walls can just tell us quickly, you know, in super summation, what the fiscal note says.
I can give it a shot. The fiscal note's a little tricky because apparently DPS doesn't have a record of how often EpiPens are used by the, 471 law enforcement agencies across the state. But the estimate that they did come up with based on that and based on each getting 20 packs a year is $1.3 million a year.
Okay. And Representative Morrison, this would be a reimbursement program. Is that how the bill structures it?
Right. It would be a grant program that agencies would apply for reimbursement.
Okay. Really, really good. All right, so let's go into a discussion among committee members. We'll begin with Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Morrison, for carrying this bill. This is very, very important. I was involved in my civilian life to get this passed in the first place, and it has made a difference and it has saved lives. And our police officers are actually usually 80% of the time, the first one in the door before the ambulance gets there. And so the quicker the patient gets this, the definitely the better the outcome. And so this is a real, it's a big number, but it's a small price to pay for this program. And I hope after we get this done, that in years to come, that a police officer can just look for the expiration date and maybe stop by an ER and exchange that, because again, ERs use these more than anybody. And I would like to see that we can put them in an exchange program, so maybe we can save a little money. But right now, I think this is an urgency that has to be done. So Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Obviously speaking from your experiences over the years. Next we have Representative Riley, followed by Representative O'Neill. Representative Riley.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. My question relates specifically to the fiscal note for that DPS has. We see a number of 1.3 million. Was that number, was that the number that was used and then it was backfilled to the how many injectors? Or was it the number of injectors and then we got to that number? I'm just wondering how that number was arrived at, because the fiscal notes that we've got says DPS does not know the actual need for auto injectors amongst law enforcement agencies and is unaware of any information or data that could further prepare this estimate. And so the reason for the question is, how did we arrive at that number? Because if we take a look at the 2021 post data, it showed that there are 10,923 officers in 417 agencies. However, of these agencies, 317 of the 417 agencies have 25 or fewer officers. So if, according to the testimony, and I'm probably going to get the name wrong, Froniak, I'm sorry.
Froniak,
I apologize. So I've got two lines of question. The first is, how did the number get arrived at? And then the second line of questions is along the lines of how Narcan is being used and how many Narcan injectors or doses, however it's talked about, how many of those are in each squad and how many do you project that you're going to need for the auto injectors? And Mr. Chair, by the way, I carry my auto injector with me. I have one. And I get it. And as a former EMT, much like a Representative Huon, you know, these were life-saving devices, and I am fully in support of this. What I'm questioning is, how did we get to the number of 1.3 million, Mr. Chair?
It's an appropriate question, especially for this committee, Representative Riley. And I'm thinking there might be two ways to get at, because I think there's two questions there. And Chief, I think I mispronounced your name as well, so I'm in good company with Representative Riley. But why don't we start with you, Chief, in terms of the realities in your situation, and then we do have I believe we have someone from DPS here that can also share a little bit about the bigger question around the fiscal note that Representative Riley has raised. So let me start with you, Chief.
So in reference to the EpiPens compared to Narcan, we carry, each of our squads carry two doses. And the EpiPens, that when we purchase them, they come in a two-pack. So each squad, because it doesn't pay to have them in one squad when you need it, it's not at the scene. So we can put them in every squad. Into some of the numbers, not every department is carrying the EpiPens. It's a pretty significant procedure to get a prescription through our emergency medical director. To get that prescription, the prescription can't be issued to a police department, so it's issued to an individual at our police department who then goes and purchases these pens at the pharmacy, and that's sort of the play on, we don't know what the charge is going to be due to the fact on what's available and when it's available and how many units that we're trying to replace. So they are vital. We carry a two-pack, and that's where we're at the hands of when they expire. And so usually our department, I mean, like I said, we used in 2019, 2020, we used 2 to 3. I don't know the exact number I got from our staff. It occurred 2 to 3 times. And last year we used 4 along with the expire, I believe, every 2 years. So that's where we run into a hurdle, is a lot of these go unused, but we are challenged with the expiration dates.
Right. That's really helpful. Thank you.
Very much so.
And I learned something new about the prescription to an individual as well here. Representative Riley, should we turn over to the department in terms of the broader question? Although part of that, I think, might have been illuminated by the chief's answer. But I believe, who's here? Ms. Knudsen, can I entice you to come forward and take a stab at that fiscal note question?
Hi, Mr. Chair. Thanks for welcoming us today. I actually do have Director Weeks on, who completed the fiscal note. If you'd be willing to let her answer, that would be fantastic.
Terrific. Always good to welcome Director Weeks to our committee as well. Please come forward, state your name for the record, and dive in.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Kate Weeks. I'm the Executive Director of the Office of Justice Programs with the Department of Public Safety. Thank you for having me here today. I'm definitely happy to answer questions related to the fiscal note. As you can see in the fiscal note, there was an open appropriation for this bill. So we didn't quite have the background that maybe some of you expected us to have. So we noted that. But what we did use is what were knowns to us. We do know that the number of law enforcement agencies throughout the state of Minnesota, and we do know the cost of a two-pack of the pens. And so using that information, we put together the fiscal note. In order to administer these funds in a reimbursement program, the 2.5% is to help us administer that. So it's not a full FTE, but they're going to be portions of people's time that it takes to set up the program, set up the financials, put together the RFP, issue the RFP, manage the requests that are coming in, making sure that the organization receiving the funds is set up in our SWIFT account. So making all of those pieces go into administering funds for the state. And so there is a piece of that that we need financing for to do that.
Well, thank you, Director Weeks. Representative Raleigh.
And Mr. Chair, just one follow-up that I thought I heard. Are law enforcement agency personnel authorized to purchase these EpiPens? I think I heard that they're not authorized. They've got to go through a different process.
Yeah, Chief, maybe you can help illuminate that for us.
Yep. Through our emergency medical director with North Moray, who's the emergency medical operations for our age, they cannot issue the prescription to a business or an entity such as the Orono Police Department. So that's why the prescription is issued to our deputy chiefs in his name. He then purchases them under the direction that they're going to be used for department use. And then we have been given authority to administer those by our emergency medicine director.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Representative O'Neill, followed by Representative Feist. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to thank the Chief Farniak for being here. He actually lives in my community. I saw him on Saturday, and he actually told me all about this bill and just wanted to offer my support. You know, he explained it much longer than we could possibly do here and how incredibly vital it is for where he serves, but also back in where he and I live in the same community. So I just wanted to offer my support and say hello to the chief. Good to see you again.
Super. Thank you, Representative O'Neill. Representative Feist.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to mention that I personally would have benefited from this bill. I had an anaphylaxis incident with police and EMTs present. It was at National Night Out, and I ate something that had nuts in it, it turned out. And, you know, fortunately, I was okay, and I was very close to my home, so I was able to handle it myself. But just like that, just to show how prevalent this issue is, like one of the members of this committee would directly benefit from this bill. So I just want to thank Representative Morrison for bringing it. Thank you.
Pretty scary. Holy cow. We don't have that in my family, so we've not, you know, had incidents, but it does conjure up some scary thoughts for me about what could happen. Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, members, Representative Morrison, thank you for bringing this forward. Chief, I'm going to probably murder this name as well as Chief Farnock. I want to thank you as well. My EpiPen is in my car right now, or actually in my briefcase. I myself have been transported by ambulance from bee stings. It's a situation where those pens are valuable when they are needed. The tough part about them is the cost, and that legislatively, I think that it could be changed where the police departments could actually be issued them instead of having to go through the process. It just matters some legislation that we have to take care of. And I think hopefully we can look at doing that so we don't have to, so one person doesn't have a prescription for hundreds of of these things and where it can be actually just given to the department. I think we should look at doing that because it is important, especially in greater Minnesota, where you can have a 45 to an hour wait for an ambulance. It's happened in my community numerous times where our ambulance is transported down into the metro, whether it's to university or wherever, but they might have 14 or 5 or 6 more calls down here before they get back up to our community and we're without an ambulance. So that's a situation that we go through up there, and where these EpiPens by law enforcement, who are usually the first ones on the scene, could deal with it. We also have fire personnel in our community that respond to medicals that could also use these. And in some areas, it might be better for the fire departments to have them because their vehicles are always kept in a heated building. Most of our squad cars in greater Minnesota are left outside in the cold and 15, 20 minutes before an officer starts his shift, he goes up and starts his car to warm it up, and these EpiPens cannot freeze. So it's different ways to do it, but it's a good idea to do these. We can't always wait that time for an ambulance. With anaphylactic shock, sometimes it's minutes that count, and our officers are usually the first ones on the scene. I think it's a good idea for them to have them, just have to make sure that they're kept properly and that we have a way to get them without having to write a prescription to one person in the department. So thank you, Representative Morrison, for bringing this forward.
Well, thank you, Representative Johnson, for the additional information. And it occurs to me that, and actually it'd be interesting to hear from the chief on this really quickly, that perhaps the language that you suggested, Representative Johnson, might be something that we can do when we're marking up the bill as we bring the big bill, as we bring this bill back. One of the things I would worry about, but that's us, is whether or not that would drag us into Health and Human Services. We certainly don't want a bill that we're marking up to be dragged into another committee at that point. So we'd have to check that out. But I certainly would be interested in doing whatever it takes to be able to help our local law enforcement and others be able to, if there's red tape and hassles, to be able to cut through that. Chief, what do you think of that idea? Is that something that could be helpful relative to, the challenges that you may face in terms of, timely, acquisition and processing those kind of, acquisitions?
Yes, that would be beneficial. I don't want to, complain because it's part of what we do.
Sure.
And, our department at 30 officers, we have the ability to do that for large or smaller agencies that maybe have to go and search for a pharmacy that's 30, 40, 50 minutes away or more. It could be problematic, but I don't want that to be an issue to stop the momentum of this because it's having those in our hands and getting reimbursed for the cost. It's nice because I think instead of us searching around for the best price, if we had an easier system that just says, Narcan, there's grants out that we apply for that grant. We get the doses that we need. They get sent to us and it's convenient and minimal charge. So that would be preferential. But there again, if that's going to delay anything, so I don't want to delay the process, but thank you.
Very wisely stated and noted as well, Chief. Perhaps there's something we can do there, committee members and Representative Morrison. And in the meantime, thank you for bringing us the bill. Representative Morrison, I'll let you have the last few words of encouragement and or additional information, and then we'll move to lay the bill over.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate the opportunity to present the bill. I'm grateful for the conversation, the discussion. I think it's illustrative that several members on this committee themselves rely on EpiPens. It just demonstrates the prevalence of these very dangerous reactions. So I hope the committee will support the effort to ensure that law enforcement can afford the epinephrine auto injectors that they need to best serve their communities. So thanks very much, and a special thank you to Chief Farniak for making the time to testify today and for serving our communities.
Indeed. Thank you, Representative Morrison. With that, the chair moves to lay over House File 2668 for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Thank you. Members, next we have Representative Hewat, House File 3188. Representative Hewat, I believe your motion is to refer 3188 to the Ways and Means Committee, and we will be laying this over at the conclusion of testimony. So just checking with you, Representative Hewat, if that's your motion.
Mr. Chair, that is my motion.
Very well, thank you. Your bill is before us. To your bill, Representative Hewat.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for hearing my bill this afternoon. Definitely there is a large fiscal note to this bill, but I hope at the end of this, you kind of agree with me that maybe even that's not enough. Mm-hmm. We all know that basically our law enforcement agencies, and this is nothing new, this has been going on since 2018, are suffering from no pipeline. They can't get officers to apply. They can't get the schools to get more officers heading their ways. And this has really been a black hole for us. And then naturally with what's been going on in the last couple of years, it really put some clouds over the profession itself. And you know, what makes me real sad is I definitely know a lot of police officers. I work with them, I'm related to them. And I ask them, very outright, like I ask anybody else in first response, hey, did you talk to your kid about being a cop? And unfortunately, every one of them that I've talked to have come back to me and said, absolutely not. And that's sad. That's really sad, because I think as leaders of our community and as police officers, they really have to be ambassadors for their own profession. I know I was when I was in EMS. And I am now as a legislator, but why can't we get more of them in? Why can't we get the ones that are there to say, you know, my family members, I want you to carry on this tradition and do it. I know everywhere I go, I look for leaders. And I want to make sure that everybody on this committee knows I'm a sports official, and the chair knows why I like to point that out. But that gives me a distinct opportunity to work with athletes in the high school level. And this is a very personal story and a very sad story, but this year I had the opportunity to be with North High School three times in my games this year on the football field. And over the years, I've gotten to know Mr. Hill. Mr. Hill was one of those kids that you look at and know automatically he's a leader of people. He's a kid that got in there when the game got rough and sorted the players out and said, let's get back to work here. He's the kid that had the formula to go and be a law enforcement officer. He's the kid I walked up to and kept talking to every time I sat on him on the field that, hey, you should really think about this. His response to me was, do you really think I can do that? I said, I know you can do it. Unfortunately, you know the rest of the story. Today I have with me my sheriff, Sheriff Leslie from Dakota County. And he's gonna hopefully give us enlightenment on what they're going through for recruitment and retention with his colleagues. Mr. Chair, if we could have Sheriff Leslie come up.
Very well. Thank you, Representative Hewat, and thank you for sharing your story of young Mr. Hill. Just a heartbreaking story, the latter part of that story. Very well. Welcome, Sheriff. You're always welcome in this committee. Please come forward, state your name for the record, and give us your testimony. You might be muted.
You got me now?
I'm hearing a voice now. Yes.
You guys hearing me okay?
Yes. Welcome, Sheriff.
Okay, good. Sorry about that. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate and Representative Hewat for your opening remarks. Yeah, you're hitting the nail on the head. We need really good people. There's high expectations for law enforcement, and that's okay. That's expected. Yeah, I've been doing it a long time, and the expectations continue to get greater, and we're up to it. I think we, as a profession, can accomplish those expectations, but we need good people. It's that simple. And so for my circumstance, I have two openings for deputies. I have 18 applicants. That's not a big pool. Five of those applicants are from other agencies. So we're basically stealing from each other, which isn't helping the pool either. And I'm not alone. Talked to Roger New, the chief in Egan yesterday. He has 20 applicants for five openings. That's Egan. That's one of the premier agencies in Dakota County that pays very well. So we're hurting. So I think this bill really captures some of the opportunities. I'm speaking on behalf of myself right now as Dakota County Sheriff. I'm not representing MSA. They have not vetted the bill, but I think it looks really good. For example, some of the things we like about the bill, that I like about the bill, it's a commitment to pay by a county or municipality. You have that at the front end, right? This would be a reimbursement. It goes to the Commissioner of Public Safety, which we also like. It's focused on the new pipeline to get more people in, and it restricts the free agency model of, you know, go to Rosemont PD and get 10,000 and then put your year in and then go to Minneapolis and get 10,000. You can't do that. So it eliminates that issue, which is important. And it also balances the state. The sheriffs in greater Minnesota are not getting any applicants sometimes. And so we have that issue of a balance that the Commissioner of Public Safety would do to try to make sure that the opportunity exists for greater Minnesota as it does in the metro, and it's not just a metro-centric focused thing. So for those reasons, I'm in support of this, and I'm working with the MSA to get their support for this as well, and I want to thank Representative Hewitt for initiating this. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Sheriff. I've heard similar stories from some of the wheels on my end of my side of the metro as well, particularly the issue of losing officers, perhaps an adjoining or a district, you know, not too far from them, largely driven by, you know, some economic, salary needs. Very well. Why don't we open this up for questions? And Representative Hewitt, similar to Representative Morrison, I think there is a fiscal note on this bill. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'd be glad to be corrected. I think the bill itself does have an amount. You mentioned there's a large amount. I'm showing in my notes, it's a $15 million appropriation. Maybe you can just fill in for me the issue whether there's a fiscal note yet and or if I'm correct about that $15 million appropriation.
Mr. Chair, and yes, that is the amount. However, the fiscal note has not been completed yet, so I'm still waiting on that. But I know that our fiscal staff is extremely busy right now, so I apologize for not having that right.
No apologies needed. We're not moving a bill here today. Thank you, Representative Hewitt. All right, why don't we begin with questions? We'll start with Representative Poston.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. Just a quick question for the bill author and then a comment. I'm a little confused by why the grants are awarded through the discretion of the Commissioner of Public Safety. You know, if an agency, you know, meets all the grant eligibility, shouldn't the grant just be given? I'm a little confused by why you're doing that.
And that might be both a question for the author, but also the sheriff, who expressed, comfort about lobbying this through the Department of Public Safety. I'll start with the bill author, Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Poston. I believe that was to put more controls on it. However, I am open to revising the bill. I think that it's important that leadership does have some controls here. I think that definitely they would be the fiscal agent. So I don't know if we can really skew around the commissioner at that time, regardless who it is.
Sheriff Leslie, anything you want to add to that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Poston, yeah, I mean, just listening to Kate Weeks just now, to find they do. They know how to distribute money via grants. They have trails, audit trails, and the ability to make sure that it's being distributed equally.
Representative.
Thank you, Sheriff, and thank you, Representative Hewlett. I just wanted to make one comment. I talked to my three sheriffs in the last week, and in regard to finding officers, surprisingly to me, but I probably shouldn't be surprised, they are getting plenty of applications, and guess where those applications are coming from? Right out of the metro. And so I realize the problem that we're having there, and I think it's important that we do something, and I'm glad that Representative Hewlett has brought this forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Poston. Representative Lucero.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. This truly is a very important topic, and I just want to relay a story that I have told before that I think is worthy of telling again. So when I was door knocking my community back in, this would have been in the months leading up to the 2020 election, I was there door knocking, coming down the driveway, going to on the road, going to the next house. And as I was paying attention to the door knocking, a car, an SUV, started, you know, was on the block and started driving down the road. And I could see out of the corner of my eye, they were slowing down. They came to stop. And I didn't look at them. But then the driver's side window rolled down and they yelled out the window, "Are you Representative Eric Lucero?" At that point, obviously, I stopped and turned around and said, "Well, yes, I am." And he said, "Representative Lucero, I just want to thank you for standing up for law enforcement. I want to thank you for supporting us because we are under attack. Our profession, not only in Minnesota, but across the country, is under attack. And we need your help." And Representative Lucero, I'm not even going to mention the district or the department that he worked for, but it was within Hennepin County. And he said, "Representative Lucero, we are scared. We are very concerned for ourselves, our safety, because of the attacks, the unjustified attacks against law enforcement professionals that are happening." And when I hear chants like pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon, coming from these disgusting people who are attacking law enforcement, that's contributing to the demoralization of our law enforcement professionals. And when these people who are attacking our law enforcement, you know, we saw another headline in the same community that I was door knocking, Natsigo, you know, we had a truck driver who was unjustifiably attacked a couple summers ago because of protesters that were let under the freeway attacking our law enforcement officers. And so there's no question in my mind why this is happening. This is happening because good people like our law enforcement professionals are under attack. That's why it's not a question. We don't need to beat around the bush. That's why applications are dropping. That's why law enforcement professionals in the metro area are applying for communities that are in other parts of Minnesota because they know they don't have support. When you have council members standing up calling for the defunding of the police. So Representative Hewlett, I thank you for this. I mean, it's a great conversation, but we don't need to ask the question and wonder why they're struggling to get applications, because we know why. It's because our great professional law enforcement officers are under attack unjustifiably. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Edelson. You might be mute, Representative Edelson.
Oh, sorry. Thank you. I was just taking a deep breath there after I just heard that. That's
deep breaths are good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, we're at this point in time. I want to thank you, Representative Hewlett, for your bill. where we are politicizing everything. And really what we need to be talking about is solutions. And so thank you for bringing this as an idea for a solution. This isn't whether or not people hate cops. This isn't whether or not people, we really have to come to a place where we can work together, that we can find, policing that works for people, that we can build trust again. Because I don't want law enforcement officers to feel like people don't want to be in this field. So I think that this is a great step. I think that we need to look at multiple things. And I just would ask some of my colleagues here. I have great relationships with my law enforcement officers. I talk to them probably numerous times a week. This isn't about how Democrats hate law enforcement. So if we could stop that narrative, that would be really helpful for me. It's hard to hear it. Because I've never said pig in a blanket. I've never said that. But yet we come on this committee and we say things like that and we create this narrative and it's just completely inaccurate. So I would like us to just take a pause and really try to help law enforcement, try to help communities as we do this work. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. I suspect like many other members of this committee, I also regularly communicate with my law enforcement. That was especially true this week when we had a horrific incident in just blocks from my home. So really important for public servants to be communicating with one another, constantly. All right, let's move on. Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I'm a little baffled by the rant that we just heard, because this is a recruitment and retention bill for law enforcement officers. I would expect that this was anything anti would be the opposite of that, but it is absolutely not. But to the bill, thank you, Representative Hewitt, for bringing the bill. I had a couple of questions. One, Leslie brought this up, and one of the things he said was that, we're seeing tougher, in certain areas, we're seeing a tougher time of getting applicants than we are in some of the areas. And I was wondering if in the bill, if there's a way, Rep. Hewitt, I'd like to work with you on that, if we could focus where these resources are going so we could be more targeted, because we know that there are some areas that are struggling more than others to get a decent applicant pool of qualified, good, moral standing officers. So I'd like to work with you on that if we get a chance. And then two, I understand that they're getting these bonuses, these payouts, but I want to make sure we have some guardrails on the terms of the merits for these officers when they're getting them. If there could be language around if you haven't received a certain amount of complaints within the last few months or years, because I want to make sure that we're not rewarding bad behavior.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir. I'm looking over some notes and I heard Sheriff Leslie's name earlier, but to the author, Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Frazier, for those comments and those questions. We can work together as we've formed the committee bill here on what this will look like and where some focus should mainly be put. But I also don't want to lose emphasis on, regardless of what we heard today from Representative Poston, that's great that he does not have an application problem, but that's not the same in our reservations. It's not the same in our smaller towns. It's just not the same in elsewhere when I've been looking around the state. As most of you know, I've been working on the EMS stuff, but along with that comes this too. And we're just having a recruitment and retention problem, plain and simple. And it's good that Representative Poston don't see that that's happening where he is, but it is happening elsewhere. And then as far as the second one goes, I think that those are decent conversations to have. I would like to incorporate all the stakeholders with the police officers themselves, along with the chiefs and the sheriffs, just so we have all the stakeholders at the table when we start looking at the guardrails we had put in place for this. I don't know if Sheriff Leslie has anything to add to that.
Sheriff?
Mr. Chair, Representative Frazier and Representative Hewitt, I think the language on 1.20 says the recruitment bonus only after the agency has paid the bonus and only after the officer's 1-year anniversary. And remember, in law enforcement, you can terminate anybody on probation. So this would allow the agency to get rid of an officer who's generating complaints. I mean, you better not be generating complaints when you don't have any, you're not even off probation. That's kind of a big red flag. And we would not hesitate to move, at least at the Dakota County Sheriff's Office. I don't speak for everybody, but we would clearly, people getting complaints that early on, we gotta send them packing. So thank you.
Representative Frazier.
Chair Blasley, I can appreciate that piece. And I do understand public sector probationary periods where you can remove folks at will. But what I wanna make sure is that we're explicit about the opportunity at the moments where we would not give that bonus, because there could be complaints, there could be issues, and they may not be removed because it may not be a removable offense. Doesn't mean that they haven't had some misconduct or at least allegations that are found to be substantiated.
Now, thank you, Representative Frazier. It's certainly appropriate for the state to attach conditions for the use of state resources. We do that all the time in the interest of the citizenry. Representative Hewitt, I appreciate your wisdom. You know, pretty similar members to the earlier conversation on the EpiPens, where one of our members, you know, raised a possibility of, you know, some policy language that could be added in that conversation as we move forward. You know, similarly here, I mean, part of the reason why we work awfully hard in this committee up front is to hear bills so that we can hear ideas that people have and then create the necessary space for us to continue to fashion those bills in a way that meets what we're hearing here. And then later on, when we pull them up either individually or in the omnibus bill, we can then take action after, you know, more deliberation. So it's good for us to be able to process these things through and listen very carefully to one another, so that we can come out of here with the best product that we can produce as a committee. Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hewitt. I have an actual question for the author, but first I want to respond to Representative Lucero's comments, because I don't like attacks on law enforcement. I don't want to see attacks of law enforcement in the streets or in the halls of our country's capital. There are elements on both sides of the aisle who have spoken negatively about good law enforcement, but I don't think anybody here in this committee has disrespected law enforcement. I have not heard of any person on this committee doing that. And so I would really encourage us to speak respectfully about both sides of the issue here in this committee, and recognize that we're all here to fight for public safety in all the ways that we know we need to work on public safety in the state of Minnesota. I'd also like to mention that, you know, calling law enforcement names is not equivalent to an attack when there are people who are literally being shot in their sleep. We cannot equivocate those two things. So I know we're short on time, so I will just go ahead and ask Representative Hewitt my question, which is, I appreciate the idea of incentives. I'm curious why this doesn't extend further to all first responders or to social workers who might be doing co-responding with law enforcement, because my understanding is there's a shortage of all of these individuals. And so I'd love to hear more about that.
Other parts of the public safety system, in other words. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hollins. Great question. And you're right. We need to look at all avenues of first response and look at how we can get more in. We will all hear a report on Friday from the OLA about the MSRB. And I encourage all of us to dig into that, because it does have to do with why we're having response time issues in the outstate. And so I would encourage all of you to listen to that report, and maybe we can enhance what packages we're putting together for retention. And I'm real curious to work with you also on the social worker program. We are having great success with that in Dakota County, and we're gonna need more. And so I think these are all positive aspects, and let's do it together, Representative.
Very well, thank you, Representative Hewitt. Again, really reinforcing the chair's methodology, that part of what we do here, a good chunk of what we do here is to hear bills and then raise issues, go back and work those bills. So I look forward to a number of you coming together and doing that between now and the time when we put our big bill together. All right, we have two final committee members. We have Representative Grasso, and then we'll close out with Representative Johnson before the chair moves to lay this over. Representative Grasso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Sheriff Leslie, for being here today. And again, Representative Hewitt, thank you for bringing this bill forward. Listen to everybody speak. I mean, it just, people's memories are very short. People's memories are very short. And sitting on this side of the table, I wish we were in person. I really do. I really do wish we were in person, because a lot of the comments that came in attacking our law enforcement community, I don't think a lot of those things would have been said if we had been in person. And it saddens me that this is what it's come to, because the men and women in law enforcement, they are the most diverse group when you talk about ethnic, religion, across the board. And yet, for the past 3 years, they have been demonized. And it has come from across the aisle. I've sat in this committee and I've witnessed it.
Representative Grasso, I hate to interrupt you because I don't like doing that. But I really want us to stay focused on this
bill. I do have a question, Mr. Chair.
I would hope you do that. I certainly have given members some latitude to be able to express their thoughts and their feelings. I frankly have not heard any demonization of law enforcement since I have put the gavel down to start this committee, nor will I tolerate any such language. And so I just want to make the public know clearly where the chair is in terms of how I will conduct this committee always. And so I feel real compelled to interrupt you and just help you to get back on course here with no doubt is a legitimate question and or comment for Representative Hugh. Representative Grasso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the interruptions have become too common as well. For the author.
Representative Grasso.
For the author.
Representative Grasso.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grasso. You know, this isn't the floor of the House. You know, great theater on the floor of the House. We're here to solve problems and to hear one another out. I understand the emotions. I give some room for that because we're human. Absolutely. You know, you and I have a relationship that goes back several years, though, and I appreciate that. So I will give you room, but I will not tolerate disruption of the conversation in this committee outside of the scope of what we're tasked to do here. We can do all that stuff on the floor of the House later or somewhere else, you know, but not here, sir. So please.
Mr. Chair, this is for the author. Would you go to line 122? And this is in reference to the previous question about the officers being in good standing as far as not being awarded the bonus if they're not in good standing. Is that clear that is on there, Representative Hewitt?
Good question, Representative Hewitt.
I'm sorry, I guess I'm not hearing what you say. Is what's written is what I want on there? Is that what you're asking?
What does it say on line 122?
Representative Hewitt, I guess he's asking for the words on line 122.
Yep, I got to pull it up because it's, thank God for technology, folks.
No kidding.
I lost it 4 times here today, and maybe I can do it another time.
If we're in committee, we'd have a paper copy in front of us if we were in person.
I agree, Representative. I'm having trouble getting it up here. Why don't you go ahead and read it again for me, and then we can discuss it.
Representative Grasso, I
just
suspect
says,
you have the language in front of you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It just says that an officer must be in good standing before these things can be doled out. So for anybody anybody to ask about whether these officers would receive this or anybody would receive these if they're not in good standing or if they had any complaints against them, the officer must be in good standing. That's all it says. And we have, like I said, we have a very diverse community in the law enforcement field. They're all moral and honorable people. They're doing the job that nobody else wants to do or will do. And again, I'll end it with this. Thank you, Representative Hewitt, for bringing this forward. But memories are very short in this committee.
Closing us out, then, will be Representative Johnson. Then we'll have the author make closing comments. Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, Representative Hewitt, I'm actually disappointed that we have to bring a bill like this forward. For the last 3 years, law enforcement has been villainized, not only in the press, by some city councils, and by members of this committee, and members of this legislative body. All but three members of the Minneapolis City Council tried to disband their police department. The citizens of Minneapolis said, no, we want our police department. This committee and your side of the aisle, the DFL party, the Democrat party, has tried to remove statutes of limitations on certain offenses against peace officers. That is in the record. This committee has passed them. But it's only peace officers. Not teachers who do the same thing. We've had a lot of teachers do stuff like that. Those same type of offenses, but we don't talk about that. We've had members of this body protesting in front of peace officers' houses, threatening to burn cities down because they're a peace officer. Why are we here now? And why do we have a problem? We need to look at ourselves. We need to stand up and stand behind our law enforcement. Yes, if we have a bad one, do we need to deal with it? Absolutely. And there isn't a single law enforcement officer across the state that wants a bad officer working because it's a bad reflection on them. They want them gone as well. But we have a process that has to be followed to do it. Some of the unions have put those processes into statute, and we have to follow the statutes. And so there is a process, and part of that process is documentation. When city administrators and city councils and city HR people don't do their duty and document, it's hard to terminate an officer unless they're on probation and they can be terminated without cause. This body turned down on a partisan vote just last year to allow law enforcement officers and cities to go into high schools to recruit high school students and show them how great a law enforcement career could be. Your side of the aisle said no. And now we're looking, trying to find ways to get officers. We've been dealing with over 3 years of villainization of peace officers by your party. My side of the aisle is we've stood behind our officers and we've said bad officers, we want gone. But 99.999% of our officers are good, outstanding citizens. They're good, outstanding officers. In fact, Minnesota is has some of the highest requirements before you can even apply for a job as a peace officer. the highest in the country. We have states from all over this country recruiting our people going through our criminal justice system for jobs. And guess what? More and more that we do graduate, they're leaving the state, which is unfortunate for Minnesota. We're short officers, yes. But it's because of the villainization of this, of a great profession that is badly needed, that is causing it. We need to stop that. I've been standing up for our officers from the beginning. Bad officers, I want gone, but we have good ones. And there's one other thing. There's a comment that about this bill that they know how to do the grants. This grant isn't going to OJP. This is going to the Department of Public Safety, which doesn't do a lot of grants that normally run through OJP. And the other thing that's missing on this bill is the administration cost percentage. Instead of a percentage, I'd rather see a flat dollar amount, because the amount of money in here is actually a lot for the administration of it. Over $300,000 at the normal 2.5%, which is extremely high for an administrative cost for a grant like this. So with that, I know that you're going to lay this bill over. Hopefully we can get the things fixed, because not only we need to deal with officer recruitment, we also need to deal with officer retention. And we have some bills that deal with that, incentives to make officers stay. But until our political leaders start standing behind their officers, nothing's going to help. I've talked to officers on the line. They don't care about the money. They're more concerned about some of the policies that are being pushed that are detrimental, not only to them, because it's, if they can be detrimental to their families, and they have to look out for their families as well. And with that, I'll leave this here and we can lay this bill over.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Representative Hewitt, thank you for bringing us a bill that stands behind our officers. Thank you for bringing us a bill that looks to provide resources for law enforcement. I do support that effort. I wish we had spent more time on this committee hearing, getting into the nuts and bolts and details of how we can do that better. Unfortunately, we wasted a lot of time hearing a lot of rhetoric. However, I know that you are committed to working a good, strong bill, and you have an open door to anyone. And so I would invite all members to knock on your door and work with you on this bill. And I would expect the same of you, sir. Representative Hewitt, please close us out.
Please. Thank you. And I appreciate that, Mr. Chair, and those words. And Representative Johnson, I know where your heart is and I understand it, and I can empathize to a degree. But in 1987, I completed my skills class. I was all excited to be a police officer. However, the place I wanted to go was St. Paul, and they had 600 people apply for a handful of jobs. That's different today. Since 2018, we've been having this problem. This was well before what happened in Minneapolis and what happened in DC and all of these other things. We have to work together. Remember, it was a Democrat that brought this bill to you today, but I'm sure I'm looking forward to my Republican friends on the other side to help me get it better. So I look forward to working this bill with all of you as we move it forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt, for the bill. And with that, let me make sure I lost my bill number here. All right, with that, the chair lays over House File 3188 for possible inclusion in this committee's omnibus bill. Members, we have one more bill left. This is Representative Novotny's bill. And Representative Novotny, I believe your motion is to have House File 3293 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means, and we will be moving to lay this over. If that's your bill, just affirm, and then we'll move forward.
That is my bill, Chair, and I have two amendments. Or I believe I don't know if I need DE1 or the Amendment 1, but might go on to DE2.
Okay.
The delete all.
Okay, so that would be the DE1 amendment. So,
yes, sir. Sorry.
All right, very well. Representative Novotny moves House File 3293. We refer to the Committee on Ways and Means, and Representative Novotny, your bill's before us. He moves, Representative Novotny moves the DE1 amendment. Representative Novotny, to your amendment, which is to your bill.
Yes, sir. Yes, Chair Marriott.
Actually, I'm sorry. I'm doing this wrong. I apologize to you. I think the proper action would be now to actually adopt your amendment, because it creates your bill as you want, and then we can discuss it. Representative Johnson, voice vote should work on this.
That would be fine.
Very well. All in favor of the DE1 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. And the DE1 amendment is adopted. Representative Novotny, my apologies for all that confusion. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. Bill 3293 is something we've worked on for a long time. And for those of you that are not on the committee and have not heard my background, I spent 33 years in law enforcement. And for over half of that, I was a use of force instructor and a firearms instructor. As the events of the last 2 years has evolved, myself and the other retired law enforcement officers on the Public Safety Committee have been looking for ways the state can address the rapidly changing expectations of the public, including the duty to intercede, de-escalation, bias motivation, and PTSD prevention. I have a bill that would, in short, have our law enforcement officers practice like they play. Multi-jurisdictional, full spectrum, full use of force continuum simulations. And this would be done under the direction of the same college skills program where these officers went through their original post-approved skills training, or what most people would consider police academy. By practice like you play, I mean that every year by post board policies, you receive instruction in use of force on all your different weapon systems and hand-to-hand issues and things like that. But due to cost and staffing issues, intensive full-spectrum live-action simulation is hard, if not impossible, for a smaller department to conduct. What does that mean? Well, for safety reasons, you would never have a live firearms training combined with a hands-on handcuffing or switching from a lethal force situation to an open hand situation and then transmit immediately to an intermediate weapon such as a taser. That's the real situations we can now simulate with the weapon simulations that we have. And the advantages is that there's realism with the possibility of receiving return fire. It's not a video game. If you use bad tactics or fail to take control of the situation, the scenario that could have been de-escalated might branch into a painful reminder that will get your attention. The second part of the equation that we must address comes out of the duty to intercede that first came up in the summer of 2020. And that is multi-jurisdictionalism. Now, the State Patrol, for example, does their use of force training with the State Patrol, the DNR with the DNR, the counties with the counties. Almost all user-level law enforcement training is done interagencies. But at 2 a.m., at the end of a three-county chase, I want to know that the first time a new peace officer sees, for example, a senior member of a department that they have never met before, have the confidence to stay stopped. If state law, department policy, post board rules, or common sense dictate that, and what they must do if they don't stop. over the course of discussions with people over the last 9 months, as we've developed the idea of this program, the leaders from the skills college, the college skills program, have indicated that we should also introduce some training into PTSD. These are the exact situations, the threatened use of lethal force or the potential of that are times that will cause PTSD, and the idea of this training with the high simulation is that this is exactly when we should address it, when you can recognize signs of PTSD in you, where you can recognize signs of PTSD in someone you're working with, and what they should do if they see those signs. Cover the services that are available and get the help that they need hopefully to keep the situation from getting any worse. On the Zoom today, I have Scott Berger of the Alexandria Technical and Community College and Tom Draper of the Hennepin County Technical College. They have helped me, along with other skills training programs, develop this curriculum that we've talked about and the cost and things like that. I would like to turn the hearing over to Mr. Draper, who would like to speak about the curriculum, and then both he and Mr. Berger and myself will be available for questions.
Very well. Thank you, Representative Novotny. Mr. Draper, welcome to the committee. Good to have you here. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It is Tom Draper. I'm with the Hennepin Technical College, the law enforcement program, the skills provider. And thank you, Representative Novotny, for bringing this bill forward. I think it's imperative, and I'll just kind of give a little on myself, is that I used to work in a smaller community in Marshall, Minnesota, and we did some training for agencies around that area. And some of the officers made the comment of, well, God, we haven't had training like this in 2 years or 3 years. So bringing a bill, something forward like this, affords the opportunity for those smaller agencies to get this training. It can be brought throughout the state and can be provided, and the good training that it could be and brought forward. Thank you for letting me bring that. Part of this would be bringing in multiple agencies and working together. As Representative Novotny said, you train within your agency for use of force, your firearms, and some areas like that, where this, you would be grouping together. You would be bringing together many agencies, working together, knowing how people operate, basically. And part of that training would also be ABLE training. It is something that we have talked about within the school systems, and ABLE is active bystandership for law enforcement, AKA duty to intervene. And de-escalation tactics, where it's imperative for law enforcement to feel comfortable with being able to do that, being able to step in and stop somebody from doing something that they shouldn't, that is unlawful, and not feel that they'll be punished or there'll be punitive action for doing such things. And as far as the PTSD is concerned, we see a rise of that in PTSD. And it's the culture when I first started back in the 80s was, you don't talk about your feelings. And if you talk about your feelings at agencies, well, then you could get put down, looked down upon. But it's to the point now where it's okay. And we need to encourage our law enforcement officers to talk about this stuff. And at the last agency that I worked, the city of Edina, it was whenever there was a critical incident, it was mandatory. And I do believe most agencies are starting to move towards that also. So I would like to turn over to Scott Berger also. I don't want to take up too much of your time. I know it's valuable.
Well, we appreciate your time, Mr. Draper. We have no doubt much to learn from you and your years of experience in this training field. Berger, I certainly would offer you the opportunity to testify as well.
Well, thank you, Chair. Scott Berger. I'm with the Alexandria Technical and Community College. Representative Novotny, thank you for, I guess, reaching out to Tom and I. I guess from the perspective of us providers of what we'll call skills, is the level of scenario-based training that we focus on, which is really, when you look at it, it's an inoculation to stress while you're under an evaluated scenario. So the expectation is that once you understand what you are required or how to best respond, is for you to actually do it and be evaluated by it. And we've been in this game for quite a while of delivering this through workforce or customized training, however we want to call it. And I guess the reason I'm saying this is because if you're willing to go forward with this item, we've got the skill set and the experience to deliver on it. And speaking only on behalf of our institution, is the example of that would be the armor system. I don't know how many years ago, but the armor system was getting rolled out as the backbone of emergency response and first responders. And it stands for Allied Radio Matrix and Emergency Response. That was rolled out through a customized training center within MnState at our school and reached up to 72,000 people 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with trackable responses and completion certifications. So it's kind of what we do. We have the equipment. We have the scenario-based setup. The legislature has appropriated funds for us to deliver this to governmental agencies. We rent our facilities to law enforcement 24 hours a day when it's not in use for classes. The indoor range, scenario-based, the simulators that Representative Novotny spoke to, real live scenarios, the force on force, which are actual live 9mm rounds filled with paint, that they do sting. But I guess I could go on for days regarding this topic because of the years that I've got involved with higher ed and law enforcement, but it's probably best if I be quiet now and let somebody else ask questions.
Well, we certainly don't want you to be quiet, but we will open up for questions, absolutely. I do believe we have second director of the Pulse Board here that wishes to comment on the bill. So, Representative Novotny, why don't we turn to Mr. Missel, and then we'll open up for questions. Director Missel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Actually, my comments that I had planned are null and void now with the adoption of the amendment. So I appreciate that, and I thank the committee, and I particularly thank Representative Novotny for his patience and understanding in that particular piece and putting forward that amendment. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate you, sir, in terms of engaging with our members to work out language that's informed by the work that you do there at Pulse. All right, why don't we open this up for then questions, comments, and I see Representative John. Representative John, I'm going to go to Representative Raleigh first. I try to kind of hold you for, kind of summing things up for your side of the aisle. Representative Raleigh.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Novotny, for bringing this. I've got two questions. One of them is, for the community education, what do you think it's going to take in order to spin up these types of classes at the various community colleges? And, in that spin up, do they have the resources right now to be able to conduct these classes?
And you're directing that to the author or to anyone?
Yeah, to the author, please.
All right, very
and
well.
Then and Mr. Chair, and then if he has others that can address it. Thank you.
Of course. All right, very well. Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Raleigh, for the question. Very good question. And that was part of the considerations when we were developing this program, is that by utilizing the skills programs that are out there at the colleges already, that they have the post certified instructors and, just as importantly, experienced actors, so that we can work through the scenarios to present a specific situation to get that specific desired response. If you haven't been to one of these facilities at Maple Grove, the new Hero Center in South Dakota, wherever that is, South Dakota County, I believe it is, but Alexandria, they are great facilities. And as I said, as a state, we've already paid for these facilities. We're just getting better utilization of them. As Mr. Draper indicated, they're, or maybe Mr. Berger, I forget, but they would have the ability to travel to some of the other community colleges. And we did this program with the thought that we move to where these officers need to be, so they're not spending a lot of time in transit. They get to the training, they get the training they need, and they get done with their 8-hour class.
Representative Rowley?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And the second question, you actually started touching on that one, Representative, and that is, my understanding is the community colleges in our system of education, we try to put all the community colleges within 50 miles of each community. I believe that's the number. Can you give us an idea on the amount of travel that would be saved by doing this? And I'm looking specifically at you know, reducing the exposure that we'd have for traveling for a day, where they could be, you know, instead of the travel time, they'd put that into the training. If you could walk us through that a little bit.
Oh, great question, Representative Bodney.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Rowley. Yes, that was part of our consideration. So we've got the schools, South Metro area, North Metro area with North Hennepin. We've got Alex Tech in West Central Minnesota. We've talked with the school at Vermilion. There's possibility of using community colleges or the college system in Marshall and Southern Minnesota and Mankato or any of the other Southern schools. They've got the equipment, they've got the instructors. If they needed to move the training to a different facility, it would just be a matter of taking those instructors and not spending the time on the road for the students.
Representative Rowley?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. This sounds like a well thought out plan. It sounds like we've got all the pieces in place, and I'm very excited about supporting this. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very well. Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Novotny, thank you for bringing this bill, and thank you for adding in those de-escalation pieces. You know, I know there's been a lot of talk about funding for law enforcement, and one thing I just need to note, because this needs to be clear. You know, over the past few years, the DFL has funded $12 million to support law enforcement each year. And last year, we even wrote and passed the body camera digital platform funding bill. It passed out of the House. We took it into conference. And in the Senate, which is controlled by your fellow GOPers, cut it in favor of tax cuts. They just introduced their tax cuts this year. It seems like they're going to do the same thing again this year. So that's why I'm glad you're bringing this bill. But unfortunately, it looks like your GOP colleagues on the Senate are going to take the same tack and cut this in favor of tax cuts. Now, I'm a labor guy. I'm a union guy. Fully support my union brothers and sisters. And what I always say, if you support a profession, put your money where your mouth is. Show that profession how much you care about them by supporting them with the finances. And I got to say, unfortunately, I am not seeing that from the GOP, and I have not seen it for the last several years. But I'm hoping this year you're going to help us push forward and get your colleagues to get on board with funding.
Well, hopefully, Representative Frazier, we can convince the other body to do the right thing, and the House position will prevail on hopefully this bill and on many others as well. All right, Representative Johnson, and then we'll move with Representative Botany to close out our bill. Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, Representative Novotny, thank you for bringing this forward. I, for those of you, most of you know that I have over 27 years experience in law enforcement as an officer. And I can tell you that the best training is hands-on training. Online training is, okay, you can read the policy and what it does. It's sort of like these Zoom meetings. We can sit here and talk to each other, but we're not actually face to face and getting things done the way it should be done. But the Zoom meetings here, we're actually shutting the citizens of Minnesota out, because unless you sign up 24 hours in advance, you have no voice in what's going on here. But one-on-one in-person training is where the officers learn the tactics and the techniques. I know at the request, de-escalation was included into this bill. But I can tell you from my experience during that training, we always did de-escalation before we did the hands-on, because we want to use hands-on last. We want to de-escalate first. We do not want to do the one-on-one combat or any type of force. We want to resolve it peacefully at the beginning. And when I went to school in Hibbing, which because Representative Novotny went to Alex, he can't use the word Hibbing. But we learned that the most powerful weapon that an officer has is their mouth. To talk to the people, to get things and de-escalate situations. That was done. We were training that way 35 years ago, we were doing that training. So we've been doing de-escalation for decades. We always strive to get better. A training like this at one-on-one is how we learn that. And that's why this is so important, to get these training centers set up, because it's more and more that that departments are helping each other, and their personnel need to train, not just with the ones they work with every day, but ones they might work with 2 weeks from now in that critical incident where another department comes in to assist. In my department, we had three police departments and the sheriff's office, and we knew how that worked. So we always did our training together. So we worked with each other, and that's the best way that needs to be done. And by having these regional training centers set up for this type of training is the best way to go. As far as I do have to reply to Representative Frazier's comments. Yes, you did do some funding. The unfortunate part of why they were rejected was because the policies that were attached to that funding. So thank you.
Representative Johnson, quite frankly, I've said this repeatedly. You know, first year I chaired this committee, I brought in lots of resources for public safety, including law enforcement. My counterpart in the other body is on record as complaining at that time about his own leadership's lack of properly funding the entire public safety continuum, not just law enforcement, judiciary, our public defense, our corrections, et cetera. Thank God for the House that we dragged that other body to do the right thing. It was so severely underfunded that they even failed to meet. They weren't even meeting their constitutional requirement to properly fund our courts, much less law enforcement. The record is pretty clear. You can look it up. The numbers are there. They don't lie. We could agree to disagree on the policy. But one thing I will not agree to is the argument that this chair and this committee has underfunded
our
responsibility for law enforcement. So with that, members,
Chair Mariani, can I respond?
We're going to close out because we're over time here, and I do apologize to you, Representative Novotny, because I did take a little bit on you. You've got a good bill here. And I'm really pleased, quite frankly, with some of the things I've heard from your testifiers, including what I think intuitively makes sense of having this cross-jurisdictional training so that folks can get to understand and know one another's practices. That just sounds like really good practice. And so I applaud you, sir, for bringing this forward and to listening in our conversation around making sure that we met was clearly your intent, that we've got the de-escalation issues and other trainings so tightly wrapped into this. I think you got the makings of a very good bill. Representative Devani, why don't you close us out, and then we'll move the latest bill over.
Thank you, Chair Mariani, and thank you for the guidance in adding the words. I think that was always the intention as we were talking, you know, and planning this out, and you just the encouragement to actually put it into the amendment to make it make sense and be readable. I have no doubt that this bill and this program, if granted, will improve relationships between law enforcement and the public while improving the mental health of the officers that continue to protect and serve. And thank you for hearing us, Chair Mariani.
Thank you, Representative Devani. With that, the chair will lay over House File 3293 as amended for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Members, we're almost at the end of the week, but we have one more hearing to get through. I look forward to seeing you all tomorrow. Until then, this committee stands adjourned.